This is RSVB Update, episode 618, recorded Thursday, May 11th, 2017, Giving and Managing Expectations. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. RSBNB Update, probably everyone's favorite RuneScape podcast. At least, hopefully. I know there's a couple others out there, some that have come and gone, some that have managed to persevere through time, but RSBNB Update is here and has always been here and will endeavor to always continue to be here. As what's the saying, as long as the creeks don't rise and hell don't freeze over or something like that?
Sure, we'll go with that. I like to go with we get older, but they stay the same age.
Right, and that has led to one of the most famous RSBNB update memes, let's say, of, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yes, very
I'm sure
true.
I remember that from way back when, mm-hmm. And our listeners do as well. But, all right, so yearly... time for Jagex to do some charitable work, and this week we have the Gielan Orion Giving Event for Mental Health Awareness Week in the UK. They are focusing in on three charities of their choosing, CPSL Mind, the Prince's Trust, and YMCA right here. And all of these three charities have representatives in-game just north of the Lumbridge Crater, and you can talk to them about their charity and learn a little bit about them. So I'll just go through a quick run through these charities and then we can kind of say what we feel about the way this was executed. So first and foremost, CPSL Mind is a charity that is local to the UK that basically provides support to individuals experiencing mental health problems, both during periods of crises and on the road to recovery. They say, and I quote, promote mental well-being and tackle stigma and discrimination within our communities. And they also have a Stop Suicide campaign, which JX is wholeheartedly supporting, which aims to prevent suicides by raising awareness of warning signs and giving members of the public the skills and confidence to have open conversations about suicide if they are worried about someone. And that is CPSL Mind. And you can find them at cpslmind.org.uk if you want to read more about that one. And YMCA right here, visited the Jagex HQ this week, and that project works with young people to educate, campaign, and influence others around health and well-being. They provide a wide range of resource guides, videos, and online tools around mental health that are accessible to young people, parents, carers, and professionals across the country. And they delivered workshops around mental health to approximately 2,000 students and 500 young people have engaged in therapy-based activities. Their young volunteers give over 1,800 hours of their time last year to design and deliver work that improves health outcomes for young people. And then you have the Prince's Trust, which aims to help people aged 13 to 30 get into jobs, education, and training and start businesses as well. So these are the three charities that Jagex is partnering with this year, and you can find all of their NPC representatives in-game along with their flags just north of the Lumbridge Crater. So this is a bit different for charity than we have seen in the past. Previously in the past, we had Special Effect and Bonus XP Weekend, Well of Goodwill, whereas this time we have a skilling event where you go skilling and you get tokens, as we did in Build a Fair and the Heart event and the Port Sarum event, and you get some extra tokens for participating in agility, constitution, and prayer training.
Well, and it's even different from other charitable events they've done, like the Oxfam or the WWF.
Right.
Which still had some of the best rewards of any.
That was the Rhino campaign, if I recall correctly.
Well, the Rhino, and then there was, yes, the WWF was the Rhino, and then there was a Big Cat.
Ah, yes, Big Cats, of course.
Yes, which I thought was really good. And I that could have really went well with this. If you remember, the Big Cat had a lot of questions, little quizzes to help raise awareness with that.
That's
that
right.
could have been extremely useful and helpful with this event.
Yeah, and you know, I think anytime you're doing something for charity, it's a good thing. I want to underscore that and get that point out of here right now, because I don't think there's any doubt about that, right?
Exactly, and I'm really glad that they are looking at mental health. That's something that has a tendency of not being focused on quite as much, and it's extremely important. I know that when I was younger, a lot of these, okay, so I knew people in my school that dealt with things. I've known people that could have used some of these services, especially the suicide prevention and stuff. That's something that, you know, I think a lot of people do know somebody that has dealt with that, or they've dealt with it themselves. So I'm glad that they are broadening their efforts, and I'm really glad that they are doing something. I was very skeptical. I didn't know if they would do anything at all when they canceled Game Blast and went to Game Jam. So I am glad that they are doing something.
Yeah, and you know, I think anytime we're dealing with a virtual world, and specifically one that is as in-depth and has as much of a community following as RuneScape does, ultimately, what we're looking at is the future of ways, at least one of the future ways of interacting with a charitable event. Because normally, if you're doing a charitable event in the real world, you know, you would go fundraising, you maybe have raffles and whatnot, and then you'd have a party at the end of it, right? But here, being in-game, we have the ability to do so much more and make it so much more interactive for everyone involved, which I think is a very interesting thing to look at going forward to the future, whether it be the Big Cats, the Rhinos, or even special effect of previous years. Now, I think we have nailed down the point that anytime charity is being done, specifically when it comes towards mental health, that's a good thing, and we're not going to fault Jagex for doing that this week. So I just want to put that out of the way with what we're about to say next. But this event feels as though it could have been better executed, kind of like we were inferring to, because right now all we got is a token-gathering event like we've had practically every month since, last summer, that for various purposes. So that was a bit of a letdown. I would have personally liked to have seen the Well of Goodwill opened. I think that would have been a good start. I also think it would have been a good idea to have a little mini challenge that you could do, and then you earn a reward at the end to raise awareness for the cause, kind of like they did with the Rhinos and the Big Cats, right?
Exactly. I think that would have been much better served. The token events, I was a fan of. I'm beginning to get to a point where it's starting to feel a little overdone. Now, I have been a proponent of it in the past because it gave you a way to earn the same kind of rewards that people could buy on Treasure Hunter. And in a sense, you can still kind of do that now. You can use Rune Coins, and I'm sure that we'll touch on that later. But it would have been better, since this is Mental Health Awareness Week, to have some events in game. They could have done that game show type of thing again.
The
they
drop.
Could have done the drop. They could have done so much more.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, there are. What do you think about the doing that little game developer kind of day that they're doing tomorrow with bringing in?
I think that's good. I think that's good for the people who are benefiting from the charity, but at the same time, I'm not sure how that's you know, benefiting the players. And I think the players should have a way to take part in that in some way, not necessarily to gain anything off of it, but just a way to take part in it. Because I think that's one thing Jagex has proven all along, is that when they undertake an initiative like this, it is going to, and it should be, a collaborative venture between the players and Jagex.
See, thank you. That's, we're on the same page. This is, I mean, this is RuneScape, right? So it's all via the net. So if they were doing it, why couldn't this be like a webinar? Why couldn't we all have learned something from those sessions and learned a little bit about game development? Maybe there were people that are interested. You know how many players we have that probably do suffer from some sort of mental illness, and maybe their whole goal in life is to be into gaming. It wouldn't have been much, but you could have turned that into like a webinar session.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think the only thing they really needed to do to improve the in-game experience was A, open up the Well of Goodwill, B, do a drop quiz that has questions from the three charities, and have some kind of earnable reward by way of challenge, rather than, you know, what effectively feels like skilling grinding. So you combine those three with maybe a webinar here and there, and I think we would have had a much better and more collaborative experience.
Yes, I totally agree. I think we would be having a very different discussion right now had they, you know, done that. We probably should mention, too, that there is – so as you're earning your charity tokens, those will go towards an outfit, and there is a pet. To complete the outfit, you do need to either buy one bond and convert it to rune coins, or buy rune coins, and there is a cape, the Defender of the Mind cape. I believe it's 195.
Yeah, 195 rune coins.
Mm-hmm. So, and that does go to the charities. It's split between the three equally. So that's good.
And also, if you purchase tokens for speeding the process up, anything you spend on rune coins doing that also goes to the charities.
Yes. So, I mean, those are good things. But I think we addressed what could have made it a lot stronger.
And I mean, sometimes it's just easier to donate GP, I find.
Well, it is, because the way that the system is working now, that GP, it counts for something. And a lot of times, I mean, that's somewhere along the way, that's real money. That's people are buying. That's what keeps this bond thing going. You know, that's what keeps it's part of the ebb and flow. And so it really wouldn't have taken a lot. And even at that, like the conversions with what they've done in the past, I think was a minimal expense for Jagex to put out. Now, I know from their point of view, this is the first of more events that will come, but that remains to be seen. Are they going to follow the same format, or will it be different? You know,
and you know, it's not so much for me that they are doing the grinding nature of it. It's the fact that we've seen this grinding nature to earn a cosmetic set and XP bonuses and whatnot as a update so many times now that it just feels a little underwhelming having that as something for charity.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So, I mean, I can fully understand doing one of these every month or maybe even every other month on this just to, you know, add new cosmetics into the game that people can earn. But if you're going to do that for charity, I mean, I don't know. It just feels a little bit underwhelming. But in any case, I mean, definitely, I guess the best course of action if you wanted to benefit these charities would be to buy a bond and spend that rune coin purchase at this event to benefit the charities. I think that would be the best way of going about this. If you don't want to spend real money on bonds and you want to donate out of the kindness of your heart using GP. So.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Well, that's the Gilinorian giving event. We're going to move on to the patch notes for this week. And there are actually quite a few good patch notes this week. Not as many as a dedicated Ninja Fix week, but what jumped out at you?
I gotta say, so I'm glad they have all the little Shattered World fixes. That's cool. The two that really stick out to me is they've added the world feed, and they've also added, like, if you get the pet, okay, so that's the world feed, but you can click on that pet and it'll show the highest floor world, the highest world you've made it to. That was something that actually was, I actually watched this in the live stream. Someone put that in the chat and Machani go, that's a great idea. I'm going to do that in TPP or TAP or whatever their personal project time is, you know. I forget what it is like. And so wow, here it is, you know, a week later he did it. So that was cool. But I have to say my favorite, absolute favorite patch note this week is being able to pick your login screen.
Yes, and
Awesome.
you know, I always say that the, you know, the Ninja updates are the dark horse that can sometimes define an RSVP update episode. And you know, one of these ones in the past has been the fact that you can now access familiar inventories from your bank, which was huge at the time. And you know, it wasn't mentioned in the news post. It was a Ninja update in the patch notes, and it was great. It was probably the best update of that month, if I recall, or maybe not the month, but definitely the highlight of the week. I don't think selecting the login screen background is that big of a deal here, but it's definitely, you know, a welcome change. You can set it to random or any of the other previously featured ones that Jagex has given. I'm personally using the Pristinus one right now. How about you?
Well, I want to use the Priftinus one, but this is why I love it so much. This is why this update is so cool. The Priftinus background is very, very light and it's very, very bright, and it's it just greets me with, like, it's too much for my eyes. And so I'm using two of them actually, for, you know, for the two different accounts. So I'm using Children of Maw on one, because it's a little bit darker and it just looks cool. And then I'm using the Guthix Memorial, because along the same lines, it's a little bit darker and it just looks really cool.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, it's always great when Jagex updates these quarterly, and I was expecting a new one before this update, but we didn't get it, so that's fine. We can now change it. But previously, before this, we had Back to the Freezer as the default background, so it was nice to be able to change off that. Also, some other Shattered World changes. Players will now be healed when reaching a checkpoint in Shattered Worlds. That didn't happen before, oddly. That's good. I think that's every five levels, if I recall.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. A variety of block tiles in Shattered Worlds have been fixed. Okay, that's interesting. Mutated Dazing Shot can no longer be used on free worlds. And you'll remember that this is comes from unlocking the ability at updates, Dazing Shot to be mutated when you're after you unlock that ability. So you can no longer use that on free-to-play worlds. Now, here's one that you guys might be scratching your head about. Auto-composting with the farming skill cape perk no longer uses up two composts per patch. Now, you might be asking yourself, the farming skill cape perk doesn't auto-compost. What is this talking about? Well, if you pay your leprechaun, you are going to be able to have it automatically fill in your patch with compost after you clear it. So as a result of that, if you had the farming cape perk equipped and it was used, I'm guessing it would ultimately trigger twice, which when you think about it, is a little bit odd. So that's what this has been referring to, and it has been fixed. So this does not mean that the farming skill cape perk does auto compost. I just wanted to clarify that for people, because that's not what the cape perk does, but that's kind of what this patch note made it sound like. So, also, an option to climb directly to the top or bottom of the Grand Tree has been added. I think we've all been waiting for that for a number of years.
Yeah, that was very good. And when I first saw that, I'm like, okay, so what? I mean, who? Why do I need to go there? And then I was talking to one of my friends going for trimmed, and I was like, where are you at? They're like, I'm actually in a dungeon below the Grand Tree. Or no, it wasn't. Yeah, it was below the Grand Tree, trying to get a champion scroll. Man, you're kidding me? Okay, cool. So this is a good patch. All right.
Okay. The 20 GP fee for using the Shiloh Village furnace has been removed. Okay. I think that's a main annoyance over everything else, because I mean, at this point, who is going to have a problem with paying 20 GP, right?
Right. Yes.
And also some dual arena fixes. The minimum number of players in a dueling arena before a private arena is created for new duels has been lowered to 10 from 20, just to prevent it from being so cramped, which I think makes sense now, given the fact that combat can take up multiple squares and you can zip all around with the abilities and whatnot, go zip, zip, zip with your surge and whatnot. So that's good. The Southwest Arena is now reserved for no movement duels only, and players will no longer spawn on top of another player at the start of a no movement duel.
Probably a good thing.
Yeah, and you know, do you know anyone who uses the dueling arena? Because I don't.
I do, but not regularly, okay. And I don't know anybody that does it with manual or revolution on. They all use legacy for
right
dueling.
And, I mean, they even removed that clue scroll that required you to get another person at the duel arena. So, And finally, something everyone who is in a clan can appreciate: the clan broadcast for someone guesting in your clan chat will no longer appear repeatedly when they change worlds and rejoin.
Hallelujah! It is about time. Thank you. Thank you, Jagex.
Yeah, good. Because, I mean, that was a lot of spam. And, you know, if it was a quiet time in the chat, oh, okay, so someone is doing this and they're a guest of our channel and no one is talking to them and yet they're hopping around. Okay, perhaps we should engage this person better. And, you know, that's one thing I used it for, believe it or not. But it'll be nice to cut down on the clutter.
And that's great for, you know, some smaller to mid-level clans, like, but for my clan, just as an example, you know, we're at max size, or we were at max size, I don't know, it fluctuates a little bit between like 490 and 500, but we have a lot of guests, because it's always open recruiting, you know, and we like people to come in, get a feel, you know, that way you can get an idea how they are, they get an idea how the clan is, all that, and it was just continuous with those messages. So I'm really glad that got fixed.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things that's really good for with Clan Quest is that whenever it's Quest Week, you know, people often come in to visit and figure out what's going on with a certain quest, ask for help for quest. Previously used to come in and ask for help with the Heroes Quest and whatnot, getting a partner. So that was our situation for guesting. And sometimes world hopping was, of course, involved in that. So ultimately, it's a good fix all around.
Yes, very good.
All right, time to talk about Menaphos once again. Getting closer, less than a month away. This week we had a development video preview of Shifting Tombs, which is going to be one of the skilling challenges that takes place underneath Menaphos, and they're tailoring this specific to non-combat skillers. So this is another video that took place in the desert and was shot with Mod Osborne and I believe Mod Joe, and they go through exactly what the case here of Shifting Tombs is. So basically, Shifting Tombs is a tiered skilling system that'll take place at tiers 50, 70, and 90, and it'll focus on primary and secondary skills. So your primary skills that are going to be involved here are, let's see, Dungeoneering, Agility, Thieving, or Construction as your primary skills, and secondary XP will be awarded in Crafting, Runecrafting, Prayer, and Divination. So, what do you think about this? I think, personally, this is one of the most interesting things that Jagex has come up with in a long time.
I think interesting is definitely the word. I don't know how I feel right now, because this is an attempt at doing a risk reward type mechanic and skilling,
yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's cool. That's very good. And we knew that was coming. So that's good. But where it comes in is it's timed. And if you know me, I do not like timed things like that. It's just makes things very difficult. So will this be good? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be like sinkholes in the fact that, people are going to be able to do this together and have a lot of fun doing it. It's going to be a viable kind of way to train, although it won't be a consistent way to train. It could be, it could be viable. It's very interesting, and I guess I won't really know until we can get in there and try it out.
Yeah, because I mean, it clearly starts at level 50 and works its way all the way up to 90. So Jagex is aiming there to be something for everyone in here, which is good. But at the same time, I think there's going to be a lot of impatience and maybe a little bit of over-expectation about this, and people will, just go back to what's easy and what's AFKable in terms of Priv. Which, I mean, you're entirely in your right to do that. But one of the things that was also highlighted in this video, and in general, talking about shifting tombs, is that this is basically a marriage of Dungeoneering and the Ark, in that you'll be going underground to some randomly procedurally generated encounter that's going to focus you in on your skills, but at the same time, it's going to provide XP rates that are equivalent to the kind of XP rates you would see in the Ark.
Yes, and it's also, I mean, in that being said, you're not gonna probably, I mean, I don't know how many outlines of they're gonna have, you know what I mean? But I don't know how many of these things you would probably have to memorize, but you might not be able to memorize it at all.
Yeah,
I mean,
especially if it's
I don't
randomly
know.
generated, which I think would be a good thing because it kind of, I could see it being in a situation depending on the time investment, which, once again, Jagex would have been great to be a little bit more clear on that after Shattered Worlds, I think, with that huge time investment. But if this is, a 30 to 60 minute time investment where you can just go in and you can get XP in one of these skills and have some fun with it, I think that would be really appealing.
Yeah, I could be wrong. I thought on the live stream where they were showing this, they talked about it. I think it was a 5 minute, like you had like 5 minutes. It reminded me a lot of Pyramid Plunder in that regard.
Okay.
Although Pyramid Plunder was like, we were told that the stuff we were doing in Pyramid Plunder was like fake and it was like a ha ha kind of thing. This one, we're really robbing stuff. So. Not sure. Not sure that was a good idea, but it just remains to be seen. I like the idea behind it. I like what they're going for. We'll see how it's executed.
I have to 100% agree with you on that. Just like everything else related to Menaphos, it can either turn out really well or turn out to be a letdown like that. But I definitely do not want it to be a letdown. And I think one thing we should mention now that you've actually brought it up is the stream that this was this week, episode 2 of Road to Menaphos. So what do they talk about on that?
Well, it was really interesting, actually. They talked about some new resources that there's going to be. So we're going to have some new fish, including like catfish, and there's a
Ooh.
couple. Yeah, and there's a oh, there was like two more. And they will basically they're going to go across the same
Yeah, it's
skill
basically going to be at
50s and
50,
stuff.
70s, and the 90s.
Yes.
Fishing will be in the Ports District, woodcutting in the Imperial District, mining in the Works District, and thieving in the Merchants District.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And so we're getting new trees as well.
Yeah,
So
that's going to be very interesting to see what the goal of that is going to be. Like, are we going to be able to woodcut with? Of course, we're going to be able to woodcut with them, but what are we going to be able to make with them, right?
yeah, I don't know what we're going to be able to make. Now, during the live stream, they said it would be along the same lines as like crystallizing teak, which if anyone's done that, it's really nice. It's good XP. It's click intensive, but it's pretty good XP. And so you'll be able to crystallize these new trees as well. So that's kind of cool. The one that I'm really interested in is the concentrated sandstone.
Ooh.
So these are going to be like, your concentrated coal and your concentrated gold that we have in the Living Rock caverns, but this will be for sandstone. So I think that's going to be cool.
Yeah, so with that, I also wonder if it's going to change the way people go about mining, because it's obviously got to have something different than Priv. But if it's concentrated, that means you don't need to click, right? And I thought they were going
Exactly.
against that.
Yes, but I think for this, you got to look at where it falls in the tiers. And so there is nothing that you can I mean, I guess to concentrate a little bit, but you can't even, it's like level 70, right? To even start doing that in the Living Rock. So with this being like level 50s or 60s, it's kind of giving you that option there. It's kind of filling out the mining a little bit. And this may have something to do with the rework that's coming. I mean, I
Ah,
don't
very good
know.
point. Very good point. Because, everything is going to need to fit together, and we're going to start seeing things fit together as we get closer to that, and the mining and smithing skills are updated with various content to fill in. So, I mean, I think that's a fair assessment. And, I don't think it's worth judging what these updates are going to look like before they're out, because I mean, we don't know. We haven't played them. We've basically just seen them on stream. It doesn't make sense to jump to any kind of conclusions for that. So I'm not too concerned about that. But was there anything else in the stream that caught your eye?
No, I mean they went over the shifting tombs, and then they talked about stealing from the stalls. It really reinforced what we talked about last week. And it made me think, expectations is key with this, and
Yeah.
I want people to to stay involved and to keep an eye on what they're telling us, because they are telling us exactly what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
They're giving us the levels, and they're explaining everything.
And you know what's a very good point here? They're telling us exactly what they're going to do, and we need to be ready for that. And for those thinking that Menaphos is going to be huge like Prif, I don't think it's going to be as huge as and as big of a deal as people think it's going to be. Yes, it's going to have a grand exchange and whatnot, but when you split it down, you basically got the skilling on the surface at the city split into four districts, right?
Yes.
Then you have shifting tombs, which is the skilling experience down below. So you have that. So there's two things. Then you're also going to have 120 Slayer
Yes.
and the 120 Slayer dungeon with all of the new Slayer creatures. And from the sounds of it, based on how these dev diaries are shaping up, it is looking like that is what we can come to expect from Menaphos. And granted, there's going to be a lot of things to check out and a lot of new items to work with from 120 Slayer, the new Slayer dungeon, shifting tombs, and of course the surface skilling. And the city itself, it seems like it's just being split up into those four areas, which I think needs to be underscored here because that's the way it's going, and people need to be aware of that for when it arrives, that you're not going to have, eight different things, eight different sections of the quadrant in Prif with, three or four different things to do. It's not going to be, 32 new things to do. It's basically going to be anywhere from, 8 to 10 new things to do in total, aside from getting 120 Slayer. That's at least the way I'm seeing it right now.
Oh, and that's exactly right. Now there will be little lore drops. You will have the library. They did mention something about doing jobs for different citizens.
Okay, that makes
I don't know
sense.
if that's a one-time deal or if that's something you'll be able to do on a repeated basis. I didn't think they were real clear on that. That could just be me. So that will be something. But yeah, this isn't like I said, this isn't Prif, but it should be good. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Me too. And more than anything, that's what I'm trying to do right now. I'm trying to manage expectations of everyone listening to this, because, I mean, based on Menafos and you here, it's so big, and what we saw with Prif, well, it's going to be different. So that needs to be managed before this, and I hope that Jagex will ultimately underscore that with a nice summary video after the third and fourth videos come out on this, because, you know, they definitely need something like that, and it definitely needs to be talked about and put out there publicly. So
yes, and people could get the wrong, idea, because look at the extent that they've went with the advertising of it. You know, I mean, we're sending Mods on location.
That's right.
You know, and how great is it just to watch him? I think he gets a kick out of just dressing up in costume.
At least, like, he didn't need to put pointy ears on this time, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
All right, and that kind of leads to our next topic here. The list of Menafos insiders have been announced. You know, this was controversial for various people when it was first mentioned that Jagex was going to do something like this, and it basically boiled down to an experiment by Jagex to see how they can disseminate information. So right now we have a list of, let's see, 4, 8, 12, 16, about 20 people who are Menafos insiders right now, and they will be adding more to them. And what they did with this is they attempted to go through all the various platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, and so on and so forth, for people there who could disseminate information here. So what I ultimately think they're doing is that, you know, they say this is an experiment, and they're hoping that information coming from the players will be shared in such a way that, I don't want to say the players hype it up, but the players will share the most pertinent information with the player base first. So, and you know, I don't know. What did you think of this when this insider program was first announced?
Well, at first I thought, good. Then I went through the application process, right, and I thought, uh-oh.
It's a profile.
This is a popularity contest. So I don't know. I mean, I have some issues with it. Were you on the list, Shane?
Nope.
Me neither.
No.
Huh.
No.
So one of the biggest and oldest fan sites has no representation.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head. You know, when Prif was coming out and all the huge other updates before that, fan sites were the line of communication that Jagex chose to use. And, you know, we would receive teaser pictures each and every week of these updates. I mean, like, we got teaser pictures for Divination, and that's how they chose to release information about updates. And it's kind of a shame they're not doing that nowadays here, because the fan sites are something that has been around for a long time, and if we're just relegated to the back compared to this list of insiders, I mean, it's like, what's our point? Are we supposed to, like, hire an operative and hire someone who is an insider to provide this information to our fan site?
Yeah, it's, I think they really missed the mark when it comes to this. Now, I understand to a certain extent of getting people that do have large followings. At the same time, fan sites are relevant. This is where a lot of people go. We still provide a great service for the community and for the player base. And a lot of people have, as they've grown up in the game, they've grown up with the fan sites. So if they had incorporated the Twitch and the Twitter and all that and YouTube and all that, if they had added that with the fan sites, or if we were had been included, I would say okay. But I could tell through the application, I'm like, the same. No, it's not. And it's sad too, because, like,
yeah,
I mean, a presence with all of it, but I'm not a big enough one, you know.
And see, here's the other problem. We are proud to announce a list of Menafos insiders so far, and they are Escapes 3, Cryptic Caxar, Bite-Sized, Jaden Blade, Act 1, Scene 1, So I'm just reading through this list here. I read through five of them. And do you see anything that's conveniently missing?
Please elaborate.
It is not saying where I find these people. Are they a Twitch streamer? Oh, yes. Are they a YouTuber? Yes. Are they popular on Twitter? I mean, it doesn't say where that's they true. Are. I mean,
yeah, it's totally true.
Like,
yeah, so we don't even know what the metric is.
Like, I mean, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So I search for Escapes 3, and the first result is Live Escapes on Twitter, and the first exclusive picture from the Menafos Insiders, which, I mean, okay, this is a tweet with a picture showing what one of the Menafos skilling areas is going to look like. It's got two retweets and three replies. This Escapes, Live Escapes, has 484 Twitter followers.
Huh.
So the point I'm trying to make here is that, yes, we have this list of people, but if you're going to make a list of people, include their handles and profiles of where we can find them. And, you know, there's our old friend, Farrink 2017, who brought us the oh-so-lovely waterfall fishing in Priftinus, says, hi, post it on the Menafos website instead. I don't get the point of this experiment. And while I disagree with what he brought into game with the waterfall fishing in Priftinus, he does have a point that Jagex has this website that they created solely for Menafos. All this information could also be posted right there.
Uh-huh.
Which, I mean, it's kind of a lost opportunity for Jagex when you think about it, that they could be driving people to the website and maybe running a some other kind of campaign with this here. So, I don't know, because the Menafos website hasn't been updated recently. It's just got shifting tombs and has, you know, some concept art and what looks like it could be a very early in-game screenshot. So,
yeah, once again, it's another, I feel like, another missed opportunity. And I don't know why they capped it where they did. They said they're going to be adding more, but okay, time's a ticking. I mean, this thing is out in a matter of weeks. So, I don't know. If you want... I mean, the experiment should have been, I heard them on stream talking about this giant list of things that they have to check and that their QA is just, you know, working their butts off and all that, which that'd be a first. Sorry, but I mean, there's just been too many mistakes in the past with QA and stuff. You could have used the insiders. You could have set up a beta server and let them help you. But there's no mention of anything like that. So their purpose is just to make tweets? I mean, I don't... The JMods have such a presence on Twitter, I don't even get why you would need anyone else. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's my rant.
Yeah, and, you know, I completely see that. Like, JMod Twitter, why not? And I think we should ultimately just underscore here before finishing off this segment that it's not a case of us being salty that we're not on the list. Entirely the opposite. It's a matter of implementation. I don't know who these people are. I have never heard of these people. So.
Yeah, and that's why you're a better person than I am. I'm a little salty. I'm not gonna lie. I'm a little salty. Yeah. Just a little bit. Just around the rim.
Yeah, I would have loved to get one of you former people on there, but hey, it is what it is.
I even put that in my application. I write for RSB and be Informer. Hello. Oh, well.
All righty. Well, then, let's move on to one of our final segments this week for RuneScape, and that is, of course, RuneFest has been announced for this year, September 23rd in London at the Battersea Evolution, just like last year. And I know there are a lot of people who are very, very happy that this was announced in May rather than in July. Because when you think about it, July to September, that's only 2 months. And that's not enough time for international folks to organize travel and whatnot to get around. So very good that Jagex announced this far ahead in advance. And full details, including ticket price and theme, will be coming soon. So they say keep an eye on the RuneScape news page for that. So September 23rd, book your tickets to London if you are interested in going to RuneFest this year. And I'm looking forward to doing the same kind of coverage that we did last year for RuneFest.
Oh, very good.
You're not making your way across the Atlantic?
You know, it's a dream that I have that someday I will be able to. I'm still hopeful that maybe there will be a satellite location, you know, either here or maybe our friends up north. I mean, somewhere that I could get to would be great, but I would love to go someday, and it is a goal, but not going to be this year.
Yeah. All right. And, of course, this week's Treasure Hunter promotion is Buried Treasure, which is basically Minesweeper for Treasure Hunter. You click on an area and you will be guaranteed to get a normal chest, whereas if you click on at a different area, you might get a more valuable chest. Each square contains at least one normal chest, but six per grid will contain a special chest, including a trove of four or five prizes. There are four types, which can contain different types of items, and the amount left to find on your grid will be displayed at the side of the interface. There's experience chests, protein chests, skilling chests, and antique chests. Experience chests are, of course, obvious of award meteorites, experience lamps, lava lanterns, and so on. Protein chests are obvious. Skilling chests are things like your springs, your portable packs, dungeoneering tokens, skilling dummies, and so on. And antique chests are coins, pulse cores, prismatic lamps and stars, the dragon ceremonial outfit, the queen's guard outfit, wicked hood teleports, and D&D tokens. And of course, this is slowly shaping up what looks like it's going to be the Menaphos Treasure Hunter kind of update, sand and searching for treasure in the desert. So you can take part in that this weekend. Get anything good from it yet?
No.
Okay.
No.
I got some protein cogs for invention that I'm going to use on double XP weekend, so that's nice.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
300 of them.
All right.
Yep.
All right.
And also some portable wells, but only 5 of them, so nothing really much to write home about there.
Well, at least it was something. I've yet to hit a chest, or a good chest.
Yeah. Okay, you good for some questions?
Oh, yes.
Okie dokie then. So our first question is from Whitey. With 120 Slayer just around the corner, what is your current favorite Slayer task?
Oh, would you like to go first, Shane?
No, not really.
Okay. I got it. All right. Well, thanks for the question, Whitey. And this is... Oh, it's hard because there's quite a few really good tasks. But I'd have to say my favorites would be either Aerith or Automatrons. Both of them I like a lot. But there's, I mean, you know, but how can you discount, you know, Abbey Demons and, oh, no, wait, let me take that back. Hold on. Sorry. let me give you a top three, with number one being, Celestial Dragons. Favorite Slayer task.
All right.
So good. It's just so good. And then probably Aerith and Automatrons after that.
Okay, that's good. You know, I really haven't done too much Slayer recently. We could look back and see when the last time I did a Slayer task was and when I killed them. But, you know, I was always a fan of the Metal Dragons, even though they were slow to kill. I was never really about doing things fast. It was more about the experience involved in it and what you got from an immersion level. So the Metal Dragons were always up there. Dark Beasts are still good, believe it or not. You know, you get a task of 300 of those, and you can use that for range training for invention, and you can get a good load of loot from them. That was good. And also the Ascension creatures.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And are you noticing anything familiar, anything similar about these?
They seem to be ranged based.
Well, okay, that's one thing aside from it, but that's actually the last time I trained Slayer was I was looking for ways to level up my range, so I was, going for almost ranged exclusive Slayer tasks, but the Dark Beasts and the Ascension creatures in particular at the time were really good GP makers. So that's why I enjoyed those ones quite a lot. Maybe I'll do some Slayer when 120 Slayer comes out. I don't know. And I, you know, the thing that annoyed me about Slayer a lot was that it felt like I never felt right logging out in the middle of a task. So I would only do it if I could complete a full task.
Yeah, that's rough. I mean, you have to do it because you just can't finish every task like that. But yeah, I have been working on Slayer actually. I've been doing Slayer and Reaper. Well, we'll talk about that later, but Slayer's still a pretty good moneymaker. Another, believe it or not, good task, and this one has been bad. And then it was really good, and then it was bad again, and now it's like leveled off to decent. But Calgarian demons,
Oh, I had
the
lots of
dark light,
problems with those.
I know, but if you did the Dimension of Disaster and you have that upgraded
Right,
dark light,
that was before Dimension of Disaster, so good point. Good point.
well, and it was OP right after the quest, right? And then
Yes.
they nerfed the
Because it
crap
was
out of
basically a
it.
level 90 Drygar for demons,
Oh, it was
yes?
awesome. It was so good. I spent 2 weeks down there. But they nerfed it and destroyed it, right? Well, at some point they have rebuffed it. Because I actually got a task the other day and I went down there. I'm like, this is all right.
I
If
think that was the
you
middle of last year, if I recall correctly, from the patch notes.
Well, and that goes to show you how much people like the Calgarian demons, right? Because I'm like, how about we'll skip that one? No, thank you. No, thank you, Morvan. On to the next, but I went ahead and took one. And if you pair that up with, with a ectoplasm eater, and you get your demon horn necklace going on, I mean, it's a decent task. It's not too bad, and you can get some decent loot, mainly because of the onyx and how high that they're going for here lately.
Very, very true. Very, very true. I like that point. I don't know. Maybe my reluctance to go train Slayer is more philosophical than anything at this point. It's because, I just seem to like making money through non-Slayer mechanics, right? But when you slice it, Slayer is so good for GP and whatnot that, I mean, yeah, that's fine, but maybe it's time to look at a rebalance that Mod Timbo is going to be doing for that.
Oh, it's definitely time. It's overdue for a rebalance on that,
It's
but
going to come probably with the mining and smithing rework, mind you.
yeah, and that's fine with me. I mean, give us some time to enjoy the 120 Slayer for a while. Slayer is something that I would do anyway, because I enjoy it. But I also enjoy skilling. I just can't make money skilling. I've never been able to make very much money skilling, and I know this is blasphemy, but I'm not big into the farming because I feel like I'm not big with anything that feels like a chore. And so if I have to go gather my herbs every 45 minutes, it just
It's
drives me
actually
crazy.
every hour and a half.
It's every hour and a half. Okay,
Yeah.
I see that
And it's
shows you
gotten a
how much
lot
I
easier
do
now
it.
because you can create a an attuned crystal teleport seed, so you can teleport directly to the Cruis patch. You got a direct teleport to the Wilderness patch. If you've done that
Yes.
blasphemous thing known as the
Yes.
Livid Farm, you get direct to Trollheim patch. And you got it direct to the Ardoian patch with the cape. You got it direct to the Drainer patch with the cabbage port. So the only ones that really require a bit of work are the Ecto Herb patch and Port Phase Mateys.
Oh, okay.
That's the
You're
only one
right.
that really requires a bit of work now.
That's true. That's true. You're
And
right.
Juju potions are tradable, so if you don't like Herblore Habitat, you can purchase those.
Well, and actually, you can just use the ectophile for the Port Bathymus
That's
thing,
right,
right?
but it's still a bit of
Clan
a work.
Quester, come
But
on.
I know I do. But I mean, I was just saying that that's the only one that doesn't have a direct to patch teleport.
Oh, okay. I got
Yeah.
you. I got you. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, of course, Ecto is the best way to get to that one. Another money-making method I think that is often overlooked is Mud Runes, because those are used for extreme magic potions. And of course,
Yeah.
Nature Runes can double up at level 92 runecrafting, or 91 runecrafting, sorry. So those are, of course, the skilling methods in addition to the Slayer. And I realize we've hijacked this question into a money-making topic,
I
but
know.
That's exactly what I see Slayer as, is the money-making skill, because unless you're doing it horrendously wrong and buffing up a lot with overloads, I think it's very possible to make money from practically all the Slayer tasks. So,
Yes.
and I mean, it gets even better, I think, if you have a legendary pet as well, which is something that is often overlooked.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go anywhere. I don't do any Slayer without my legendary pet. It's a necessity for me. So, yeah.
All right. Well, there's some good answers there and answers all around. Next one comes from Pernasius. Hey, guys, and welcome aboard, Tanis. Quick question for discussion this week from me. We have seen another mini game introduced by Jagex with fairly underwhelming rewards for time spent. With the other mini games already pretty much dead content, do you think that the dev team should perhaps look at reviving the rewards for the older ones to marry into Shattered Worlds? Imagine how much Castle Wars would change if the Profound Armor reward from there was made to be best in slot accuracy bonus when used on Shattered Worlds. Then we could see a degradable upgrade for the Elite Void Armor that Tanis suggested last week, introduced as a more substantial and useful reward for it. I love that suggestion by Tanis, by the way. We may see mini games played properly and not just let's log in and sit on the ground for 20 minutes while we play something else or watch Netflix. I'd love to hear your thoughts on something like this. As always, thanks for the great podcast and happy scaping from Parnassius. He raises a good point that how Shattered Worlds could ultimately provide upgrades for all the other armor out there. And, who uses Castle Wars armor nowadays when we're all leveled up so high, right?
Well, exactly. I mean, what do you put that in your house, by your staircase? I mean, that's about it, right? Or get it for trim. I mean, otherwise, what else would you use it for? But thanks, Parnassius, for your warm welcome and your question. I want to say I would like to see some integration like that between the mini games. At the same time, they did try it with the spotlight. And it,
That had the
you're
opposite
right.
effect of making one mini game popular and killing all the others for
It
that week.
exactly, and he's right. You sit on the ground. I remember I had never done Fist of Guthix before. I go in there, I'm trying to play Fist of Guthix, and people are yelling at me. They're like, "What are you doing?" I'm trying to play. No, you don't. That's not what you. Okay. Like, I'm sitting there like, I don't. And I'm so naive. I'm like, I didn't even know what boosting was. I'm like, I learned real fast because people were angry. Same thing happened at Castle Wars, actually, to me. I was going for arty task, and I run in there, and people were irate. I mean, irate. It's my bad. I didn't know what they were doing, but yeah, it's the mini games are so hard to figure out what to do with them.
Yeah, it's really a shame because we used to have weekly mini game events on Saturday afternoons, and we would alternate, between Trouble Brewing, Castle Wars, Soul Wars, Fishing Trawler, and whatnot. And they were fun to do because we knew everyone there. But at this point, everyone has the rewards, and the rewards just don't feel in tune with the higher levels that everyone has. That it doesn't feel like there's much point to many of the in-game mini games, which I think you and Parnassus here are both hitting on. So, this just speaks to the potential, I think, of Shattered Worlds. And, I really hope that at some point we could expand Shattered Worlds out into skilling.
That would be very cool. I mean, that would be interesting. And I think Shattered Worlds kind of gives us a bit of a prototype with what we need to do going forward. They need to look awesome. Now, I know, with what was it last year? Was it 2 years ago when they graphically reworked, was it Barton? Barbarian Assault? No.
Wait, might
what's
have been
the...
Barbarian
Okay.
Assault.
Yeah. Okay. And so it made it look better and they added rewards, but it really kind of fell off. Like most of the things that they do with minigames seem to, it has a big punch in the beginning for the first like week or two, and then it will just fall off. And then, like you said, with the minigame spotlight, that had the effect of making one thing popular and basically people just boosting it and killing everything else. I almost wonder if this kind of plays into what you were talking about last week with having a reward-based player, you know, a reward-centric player base. You know what I mean? Maybe some of these games need to just, maybe you need to worry about the mechanics and the fun factor of the game. And if you make it fun, maybe people will play it. I don't know. It's a really hard question.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to say two things here. I think first and foremost, this is a prime indication that there needs to be something looked at for mini games across the board. There's no question about that. Then on the other hand, you have mini games that are just removed, like Rat Catchers, for example. And a while back, there was talk of removing mobilizing armies just because no one plays it and it's very mechanically intense and it doesn't really make sense. And, you know, that's a shame because mobilizing armies is an effort to have like a real-time strategy game in RuneScape. So, you know, there's so much that could be done. It just feels like we're focusing on other things, and maybe sometime down the road we will get a chance to focus on all of these other updates. And on the topic of minigames, I have an idea that could be used as a tie-in with regards to the RuneScape product and another way that Jagex could potentially create something great. So I have been having this idea bounce around in my head for a while, and I think the idea that Parnassius had here of maybe having a different way of updating your armor and whatnot, whether it be through Shattered Worlds or something else, could be a good thing to do. So what I think Jagex needs to do for their next game that is going to do well and, you know, be a hit just like Chronicle is and RuneScape 3 is and Old School is I think Jagex needs to make a MOBA, like Heroes of the Storm or League of Legends, with RuneScape characters, RuneScape combat weapons, and RuneScape combat abilities. And basically what you would have this be is you would have this be the evolution of combat that Jagex wanted the evolution of combat to be. You design combat for RuneScape from the ground up without any past baggage. Now, you might be saying, how does this relate to the minigame question here? Well, the way this relates to the minigame question here is that it effectively replaces combat-based minigames in RuneScape. You can keep Castle Wars and Soul Wars around for legacy purposes, but I don't think at this point it makes any more sense to bring in combat-intensive, mechanic-intensive minigames like mobilizing armies. I think mobilizing armies needs to be removed, and Jagex needs to work on a separate product that situates the people who want a fast-paced combat experience with RuneScape lore and RuneScape characters with some in-depth mechanics. And that's the grand statement here.
That makes sense to me. If RuneScape came out with a MOBA, I would actually try to play a MOBA. I've never gotten into them because I was kind of behind the curb on it. And I'm always apprehensive of trying to explain myself when I'm meeting people for the first time. And so that's why I've never done League of Legends and stuff like that. If I could start off fresh on the same playing field as everyone else, that'd be great. And I think that I would love to see a RuneScape MOBA.
And the great potential of it is they can do it in a way where it's easy to get into and it's easily explained, just like they did with Chronicle for people who hadn't played card games before.
Exactly. And they should learn those lessons from Chronicle because it is something that they've done really well. Now, I let me ask you, Shane, because you're a lot more technically savvy about this stuff than I am personally. Could these mini games, could one another way to increase people playing them be to create a mobile version of them that tied in with the game? Like, is that possible?
It's entirely possible. The downside, though, is just you don't know who has a mobile device and who wants to play a mobile version of this game on your phone. And you don't want to put in RuneScape content that can only be accessed by playing another game on another platform that a person may or may not have access to.
Okay, so, but like a RuneScape player that was like playing on their desktop or whatever, like, could they play then with somebody that was on a mobile device? Like, I'm saying, like, mobilizing armies, you could either play it if you're on your phone somewhere, or you could play it if you're on your desktop. But it would be the same instance, or you know what I mean? Like, it could set up the
same. You could. Anything's possible. But the person on the mobile device would probably be severely disadvantaged because of the interface changes.
Okay.
So anything is possible. It's just a question of, does it make sense to do this? Should this kind of game be put behind a different platform that our player base may or may not have? And it's really not a good idea to put those kind of items replaced like that. So while what I mentioned would be great, it would be a separate solution to this mini game problem, and it wouldn't solve the problem per se. You would still need things like Parnassus suggested, but I think it would allow for a different kind of combat to take shape in RuneScape, and maybe even scale back on the reliance of the evolution and combat system a bit.
Yeah, very good. I can't wait. I want to see it.
I want them to do it. Me too. And, you know, I think that, you know, that's another direction they could have gone when they were doing the evolution and combat. Granted, RuneScape did need something like this, but, you know, they could have, if they wanted to, went full steam ahead with every little change they wanted to do, had a separate game and been really successful with it. So that would have, you know, completely changed the path of history for RuneScape. But hey, we are where we are, and mini games as they are right now definitely do need to be looked into. Now, the only question I have following from Parnassus' question is, would Shattered Worlds be the only place where you could use this armor and get that accuracy bonus?
Yeah. Well, I like the fact that you could. I like his idea about being able to enhance it through other mini games. Like, that's kind of cool. And how I would do that personally would probably be to make sure that it was in the Spotlight Shop, so that you could play different mini games. I mean, you still have the same problem of it just being Boostscape.
But, yeah, and
I mean, I don't know how else to get around.
And you know, to completely fix that, you definitely do need to look into what's going on and see if you can find a different way of fixing it. So,
yeah.
And we don't have the data to do that, so I'm going to stop making suggestions right now because I don't have the data that Jagex would have. So.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Parnassus. Once again, definitely something that should be looked into going forward.
Yeah, for sure.
If you guys want to send questions in, you can do that by visiting our website, update.rsmb.com/ask. We also have a telephone number where you can text or send voice messages to, which is 571-57-BNB or 571-572-2632. And we also take questions on Twitter. DM us, @mention us, say it's a question, and we'll get it on the show. Just like Whitey did. Okay, you ready for some tech news?
I'm ready.
Okay, so this week Microsoft is having their annual Build conference in which they highlight what the future is for the Windows platform. At this year's Build 2017, we learned that Windows 10 is now running on 500 million devices. Yes, that's 500 million devices running Windows 10, the operating system that, you know, most of the tech media was scared of and spreading all kinds of FUD about when it came out in regards to privacy and other concerns in that area. But I think 500 million is a great number to have for what's coming up 2 years now. So really great on Microsoft's part there. Also, the next major update to come to Windows 10 will happen this fall, and it will be called the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update. It's going to have some new features, such as a new design language for developers to make it so that if you're using an application on one device, it's not going to look entirely different on another one, which is something that I think people will be grateful for if they use multiple Windows devices. They're also going to be working on something called Windows Story Remix, which can basically be thought of as a modern Windows Movie Maker that's going to let people edit photos and videos using filters, music, and various 3D augmented reality objects. So that means you're going to be able to modify the 3D scene of your movie if you use Windows Story Remix. We're also bringing out a new feature called Timeline, which will track everything you've been doing on your system and let you go back in time to pull windows out and pull files up that you might have been working on earlier in the afternoon if you needed to go get them right away. So a different way of thinking about the modern Windows Explorer interface, which I think is good. It's good to experiment with these things after almost 30 years of Windows Explorer, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're also going to have Pick Up Where You Left Off, which obviously is a very long name, but it's going to allow applications to be resumed on different devices with the various Microsoft platforms applications. And yes, that also includes iOS and Android. So we are seeing a huge admission here from Microsoft that they're willing to work with other platforms and they're not expecting everyone to be using a Windows phone or a Windows laptop. So that's very big of Microsoft. And along with this is coming a cross-device clipboard, so you can copy and paste to your iOS and Android devices from Windows using the various apps, which is going to be an interesting thing to do and see how they do that. So, and iTunes is coming to the Windows Store, which was a bit of a shocker to everyone.
What?
Right?
Wow.
Because so many people see iTunes as a horrible piece of software on Windows, which is true. And, you know, Apple updates it, but probably not as much as they should. So the hope from this, and I think what everyone should hope for with iTunes appearing in the Windows Store, is that it's going to provide a better experience for people using iOS devices with a Windows PC. Because you don't want an application that comes from the Windows Store to provide a subpar experience, right?
Yeah.
So hopefully Apple will take note of this and redesign iTunes for Windows to fit better in with the platform that exists. And also some stuff on the augmented reality and mixed reality front, some new mixed reality controllers that do not require 3D sensing cameras to be placed in the room. All you need is an Oculus Rift or HTC Vive, which are two very prominent VR headsets to take advantage of this. So this is kind of like the next step forward for the Microsoft HoloLens applications that we saw showcased with Windows 10's release. And finally, Cortana is going to be getting developer extensions to basically create what are called Cortana skills to compete with the Amazon Echo. So that's what Microsoft's planning for this year. Nothing too grandiose, and I think it all expands nicely out from where Microsoft is and shows their vision of Windows coexisting in a multi-platform environment.
I think it's the right mix, and I'm really looking forward to the new I forget what you called it, but it's the new Movie Maker that'll be in the fall.
Yeah, Windows Story Remix.
Story Remix. There we go. That sounds really cool. We need a new Movie Maker. That was something that, if I remember right, when 10 came out, it didn't have like a specific 10 version. You had to go get the old one and then reinstall that.
Yeah, or if we're being real here, use Adobe Premiere Elements.
Right. And I mean, for those who have that was great. I didn't have that software, and I didn't have the I couldn't buy it at the time. Not to mention editing's really difficult for, like, I was learning at the time. And so, like, that's what I liked about Movie Maker, because it was really super simple. You can't do that much with it, but someone that's, you know, as bad at editing as I am could make something out of it. So really looking forward to the new version. And I'm wondering, like, since this is going to have all that 3D capability, is this with an eye looking forward to the stuff that will be with HoloLens?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think that's where they're going with this. Because I think the ideal thing would be that if you have a video and you have pictures and you have augmented 3D objects that developers can create, modelers can create, and you use Windows Story Remix, you can ultimately create a virtual reality 3D experience based on the videos that you have, and then you can share them out once these VR headsets become, you know, less expensive. So,
Wow. And
you know, Microsoft needed to do this because we've had things like iMovie on the Mac for a long time, and it works and it does things really well for just, you know, cutting together quick home movies and whatnot. But there's nothing that is free and can do it well on the Windows side. And, you know, it's definitely something people need, because if you look at a modern smartphone, the thing that is going to be taking up the most space next to your apps, or maybe even the most space overall in a smartphone, is going to be photos and video that you take.
Yes.
So this is something that's definitely needed, and Microsoft interacting with all the other platforms is great. One thing that I am a little bit disappointed about and a little bit concerned about is that there was no real mention yet of Windows Phone and the rumored Surface Phone.
Well, that's interesting. And it almost sounds like they were admitting that, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, they may have a Windows PC, but still got an iPhone. So, I mean, I'm glad about that cross.
Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see what happens when this update ships, and I'm hoping that we'll see something Surface Pro 5 or Windows Surface Phone related coming when Microsoft ultimately does announced hardware later on this year. So fingers crossed on that. Our next story is something that you found, and the modder is effectively hijacking pirated games.
Essentially.
Let's see, what game was it?
Nier Automata.
Nier Automata and the very popular Farm mod. All right. So tell us about this and what exactly happened here. It's very concerning to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a really interesting story. So when I came across it, I thought our listeners would definitely want to know about this. A popular modder known as a Chaldean came out with a mod. It's called the Farm mod. It was for Nier Automata. So like many PC games, PC ports, Nier Automata shipped with little to no optimization. There was no resolution sizing. You know, it was your typical poor PC port. It just continues to happen. So a lot of times modders will step in and they fix the games, essentially. And that's what he did in this case. Now, he's also done this with, you know, like the HD Final Fantasy X that's on Steam, the Dragon's Dogma, and a few others. So he's very well known. He's very popular. And this mod is so popular. A lot of people will say it's essential to the experience of Nier Automata. I don't know if I agree with that. I don't think any mod should be, whether it is or not, it shouldn't be essential to the game. So he recently updated this game. And what he did was he put in...
He updated the mod.
Yeah, he updated the mod.
Okay.
Yes. And once you updated the mod, it checked to see if you had a legitimate copy of the game. If you didn't have a legitimate copy, if it was a pirated copy, you would get met with like a licensing agreement asking you to buy the game from the developers. That I don't necessarily have a big problem with. But where it goes, where he went further than that is at that point, it would delete the pirated files. A lot of people are calling that, you know, malware. Other people are saying, no, because those were pirated files in the first place. This has been a big blow up all over the Steam forums on Nier Automata. And in my opinion, it's not so much about Nier Automata, it's about this could go on, and I mean, this could become a thing, and we don't really know the backstory to this. There's too much to speculate and not enough real information, but those are the facts that we know of at this time.
You know, I think that modding games is a case-by-case thing. There are some games that you should not touch, and there are other games that the developers outright invite you to touch, and I think that's fine. And they should even go so far as providing an official avenue to create these mods. So, with that being said, I do think that he did go too far in this. As a developer, you shouldn't be looking to see if something is pirated or not. That's up to the original publisher of the game to basically determine if you can use the software or if you cannot use the software. And anytime you are deleting things on someone's system without their permission, that's bad, because you could ultimately end up deleting something that you didn't mean to, which would just be horrible. So I think it's definitely I think the modder is definitely in the wrong here. And, you know, it just sounds like it's a poor case of circumstance where you have a game that's not cared for properly by its developer, and you get some overactive modder who is deciding that they want to step in and become, you know, the judge, jury, and executioner on whether or not a game is pirated. So, you know, I don't think it's right, but hey, that's what happened here. And the guy should definitely be held accountable for doing this. So, I don't know. And, you know, this is, I think, all in all, another reason why if you're using mods for any game, you should be very careful about what you ultimately install. So,
that's exactly right. I couldn't agree more. I think he did overstep. And, we don't know what the motivations were with that. I think you need to be extremely careful when it comes to mods. That being said, some mods are really awesome, but you really have to do your homework and you really have to be careful. I know when I first started getting really into PC gaming, I had learned enough to be dangerous to myself, right, and my system. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know what I should have known, but I knew just enough to really make a mess of things. And if you get someone that's in that kind of situation and you get the wrong mod, bad things can happen. It's happened to me. And I'm extremely careful now, but this was a bridge too far. And at the very least, there should have been a warning. But I don't know. I don't think it should have ever deleted the files. But this was, I thought this was a good story, just because people need to be aware.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone has to be aware.
That stuff is out there. Yeah.
Okay, our last piece of tech news deals with Snapchat. Snapchat had a very disastrous first earnings report on the market. You guys will recall that Snapchat had a huge IPO, and it has really let investors down. And, you know, it's really not surprising based on what Snapchat does. They were down 23% after their initial earnings call on Thursday. Barclays Bank Ross Sandler wrote that users last quarter that were added by Snap were not enough to disprove the idea that Facebook is crushing Snapchat. The Facebook that is crushing Snapchat thesis, and it's going to persist for a while. Also, average user revenue declined on Snapchat for the first time this quarter, and Snap has already started to draw comparisons to Twitter, which, of course, is another product that had growth issues while being shadowed by Facebook. So, everything is not all rosy for Snapchat here, and Snapchat's CEO really downplayed these remarks, saying that Snapchat doesn't need to be as big as Facebook to be able to compete with them, and they're going for quality over quantity. So lots of people are not very happy with the way the Snapchat CEO dealt with this call. And ultimately, it is shining a light on what were and what should have been the initial doubts when Snapchat went public, that this is a company that on its own is going to have trouble raising money, just like Twitter did, unless they manage to find something out. So at the end of the day, Snapchat is not all it's been made up to be in the market. And, you know, I can see that now with this here. And it, I don't think we need to see this earnings call to see that. In fact, it was kind of obvious they were going to go this way when the way Snapchat makes money is through their stories and, of course, selling Snapchat filters to people who want to buy them and put them out. So I don't know. I think Snapchat probably shouldn't have gone public, and, you know, I don't think there's enough here to stand on its own. It doesn't look to be worth that much, and it's just really worrying that people are investing in this company. So, I don't suppose you use Snapchat.
Actually, I don't. My wife uses it a lot, and I know a lot of people that use Snapchat. I don't think they were done any favors a while back when, was it Facebook that kind of started taking a little bit of their...
Yeah, Facebook and Instagram.
Instagram stories, yes. So, I mean, they're facing an uphill battle with that. At the same time, there's a lot of users. I think your comparison to Twitter is just right on the money, because, you know, Twitter had a lot of users, couldn't figure out how to make money. So I think, I mean, it's exactly the same kind of situation.
I mean, at some point, this has to stop. People have to stop investing in these things that aren't going to go anywhere. And I think the idea that, you know, Twitter and Facebook got big and Instagram got big in the beginning, yeah, that was true back then. But we're at a point where Twitter and Facebook are so huge that it's really hard and almost impossible to compete with them unless you're offering something truly unique and has a true story behind it. And, you know, it's looking almost like we have a modern case of monopoly on our hands with Twitter and Facebook, each in their own respective fields. So that's going to be something definitely to watch for going forward. But Snapchat is not as rosy as it seems.
Yeah, it's definitely something we need to keep an eye on. And just keep our eye on that and hope for the best.
All right. Well, let's talk about skill of the month now, our cooking skill of the month. We have Touchpad Pro maintaining a very linear trajectory of an average of 5.5 billion experience gained per day in the cooking skill. He has gained 55 million cooking experience thus far. Parnassius has gained 5.7. Flash has gained 1.8. Whitey has gained 913,000. And Ironassius, Parnassius' Iron Man, has gained 642,000 experience.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, so, it's a cooking skill of the month. And, you know, I think Touchpad here is definitely going for, he hit the 120. He's probably going to hit 200 mil this month. So I think that's why he's doing it.
That's incredible. I mean, such a nice job from him and everybody else. And can I just I want to throw some props to Parnassius, because that is the best Iron Man name I have ever heard.
Right? And it's amazing Jagex didn't prevent him from
I know. I know. Very cool, though.
All right. Well, in other things this week, we have Alex's analysis of Shattered Worlds, which he calls blown to pieces, and compares it to all of the other PVM minigames out there. And, you know, that's a great comparison, and I would highly recommend that everyone read this here. And he's kind of echoed the sentiment that we had last week, that it's not about the rewards, it's about the combat experience itself.
Very good. It's a very good article.
That can be found at informer.rsbnb.com. All right. You ready for some achievements?
Wow. People have the community has been active again, haven't they?
They have indeed. So starting off on May 10th, we have Diapolo 10 with 99 Hunter and Letterman with 99 Woodcutting. Moving on to the ninth, we have Dialapolo 10 again with 99 Constitution, 99 Attack, and 99 Strength, and Pokemama 1 with 99 Defense. Then on the 8th, we have Dialapolo 10 again, twice, with 99 Agility and 99 Defense. Then on the 7th, we have Touchpad Pro with 120 Cooking and 120 Hunter on the 7th. And then CID Reigns with 99 Ring Crafting on that day as well.
Yeah, you heard that right. He had enough time to get 120 Hunter as well.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Okay, and on May 6th, we had Xenon Ray with 120 Invention, K Level with 99 Invention, Dialapolo, is that right?
Yeah, I'd say that's right.
Dialapolo? Yeah. I'm sorry if I butcher your name. My apologies. 99 Rune Crafting, Jibba, 120 Invention, that was on May 5th. Dialapolo again with 99 Woodcutting. Wow, you have been busy. That was on the 5th. Pokemama 1, 99 Attack on the 5th. And Gloom Reborn with 99 Woodcutting on May the 4th.
And Dialapolo 10 finishing it off with 99 Firebreaking also on the 4th.
Dialapolo 10. Okay, there we go. Oh, oops.
Yeah, that's all right. There was a page break there. That's, okay. That's perfectly fine. But good achievements all around, everyone. And congratulations specifically to Dialapolo for completing what looks like max, and Touchpad Pro for getting two 120s. But all in all, good job all around.
Yeah, good job, everybody. You guys are awesome. You have been busy.
All right, pick of the week time. This really isn't a pick. It's more of a tip for someone who uses Google services. So Google recently revamped their whole sign-in system. And with that came a revamped Google Activity dashboard. So if you go to myactivity.google.com and log in, you can access all of your activity on any Google property. So you can see what you saw for ads and what you kind of data you gave to them. You can also see what you did for map search, image search, and of course search on Google and search on YouTube. So if you want to go and say that you specifically want to remove all ad tracking data that you have gathered on you based on all the browsers that you've been doing, you can do that. You basically click delete activity by, choose ads, and then you can choose either today, yesterday, last 7 days, or all time. And then you can even choose a date range if you want. So Google makes it really easy to filter and granularly delete data that you don't want them to have. Then there's also a section for activity controls, which allows you finer control of the data that you're sending back. So, for example, there's a web and activity control that allows you to toggle whether or not Google Chrome browsing history and activity from websites and apps that use Google services can report back to Google. You can toggle that on or you can toggle that off. There's also a section for location history, device information, voice and audio activity, though those latter two are more for if you use a Google Android device. And then, of course, a section for YouTube activity as well. So, well, you know, this isn't something you're going to do every day. It's something that you could take a cruise through every so often and see, what have I been doing? Is there anything I want to delete? Maybe the ad tracking data, for example, just to give Google a fresh slate of trying to figure out who you are to provide relevant ads to you. And I bring this up because it's something that Google has recently revamped from an interface perspective, but also because it allows for very granular controls of what is happening with your Google account. And that's something that Google gets a lot of flack for, and providing you that kind of control is something they need to do as a responsible company. So I'm very happy using Google products with this here, and I'm not too concerned about what they have because I can see it all right here, and if I don't want them to have it, I can wipe it away. So you can find this at myactivity.google.com.
Very good.
Anyone who has a Google account can use it.
That's great.
Yeah, and it's something you should do, you know, just like enabling two-factor authentication on your Google account, because let's face it, use your Google account on an Android phone if you have it, even on an iOS device if you have it. You use it in Chrome, you use it on YouTube, you use it for search, you can use it for tons of other websites. So it's an account you definitely want to keep safe and keep control of, and the My Activity portal helps you do that.
Very nice. Nice.
Yeah. All right, what have you been doing this week?
Oh, it's been busy. I have been doing mostly Slayer and Reapers and a little bossing just to try to make as much money as possible before double XP so I can trying to buy as many cleansing crystals as possible, and all while trying to get a second account going, mainly for old school. I'm going to dip my toe in that water. Actually, I'm going to be doing that later tonight because I do a Throwback Thursday on Twitch. So I thought, you know what? Let's throw it back to 07, see how this goes. So I'm going to try that. I may regret it. I don't know. We'll find out. And so I've been trying to, you know, just make as much money on my main as possible to try to support all of my different endeavors for right now.
All right. Sounds very good. And of course, making GP is always a good thing around these times when double XP weekend is on the way.
Yes.
So, as for me this week, I have been Ark Island hopping still. Got some invention XP off of that. But aside from that, farming herbs and farming secondaries for double XP weekend. So that's coming quick, and I'm getting myself ready for that. And, of course, doing the spring fair still, unlocking a few things there that I want to get before it goes away. So that's what I've been up to on RS, pretty much just experiencing all the updates that have been around that I can play with. So it's good to have variety like that, so I'm very pleased.
Very good.
Well, I believe that finishes this episode of RSBNB Updates. So anything else before we go?
No, everybody have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you for sharing your time with us, and see you next week, everyone. Take care.